when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society can sometimes make us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and in tennis, love means nothing. Joining me is the girl with a weak back but never a weak mind, Jessica Brown Finley.
I love that line.
So sexy.
So good. So good. Just in that last moment, he's like, I'm not a gentleman anymore.
So good. It is so good. Let's just sit here and say so good for a
so
long time.
Good.
Today we're talking about the 2004 film Wimbledon, starring Paul Bettany and Kirsten Dunst. A film that, from its conception, even at the time, like in 2004 when I was about 14, I was already like, this is underrated.
Totally.
It was immediately not rated.
Yeah. It just kind of, it's a film that every year around this time, I then realise I need to watch it again and try and talk to someone about it.
Yeah.
And just get sort of confused looks at anyone I try and raise the subject with. In that it's my favourite thing about Wimbledon.
Yeah, is the film Wimbledon.
Is the film Wimbledon.
Because the thing is, if you're too sort of not that way inclined to follow a sport, but you love the vibe of a sport,
yeah,
it can be very alienating. because you're like, the thing about Wimbledon, I love the way it looks when it's on TV. I love the sound of it. I love the how attractive everybody is.
100%. I love that. I also know when it comes on, when it's on telly, I know that summer. Now it's almost like official. I know there are actual official summer times of when things start. But for me, it's like, okay, now we go. Now it's on. Pims, it's fine. Doesn't matter what time it is. Like, you're all good. Everything's, all bets are off.
And the vibe becomes different when Wimbledon starts. Obviously, now we're just talking about Wimbledon, the sporting event. But I think it is interesting the effect that it has on people who don't care about the sport.
Yeah.
It's like the thing where, you know, it's sweltering, but everyone's kind of packed inside a too hot pub. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like got a sheen of sweat on. And there's just like shandies and pims everywhere. And it's like, it's just like, and the vibe in London changes because obviously we're adjacent to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I do think it's so easy to just appreciate Wimbledon on an aesthetic level without having any idea how tennis works.
Totally. I think it's very stylish. It's all the green. Yeah. It's everyone getting into like sort of quite relatively preppy clothing. Regardless of however they dress normally.
Yeah.
There's a sort of uniform to it. The whites, it's all very...
Yeah, more than any other sport, it is a fantasy. Like, they create a fantasy world. I suppose golf is kind of like that as well, where it's like they're creating a little fairy tale land where everything is sort of genteel and there's just everything is grass and everyone wears what, and like it does feel like a weird like parallel universe that they create for us or something. And it's a different thing as well, and this movie gets very much to the heart of that. Unlike a lot of sports movies that are about team sports, like, or all you know, most sports are team sports, it's sort of like I find those very hard to concentrate on. I find it very hard, like when the Euros or the World Cup is on, to get into those things in the same way, in the way that I will sort of get into Wimbledon, because there's too many stories, there's too many people, and there's too many backstories of those people.
Yeah.
But with tennis, it's just two people. It's like, oh, well, she's a Russian teenager and she's been here for 20 years and she's going to stop soon. You know?
Yeah.
Wow, a dynamic.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. I love getting into that. I love sort of just momentarily becoming not an expert at all, but sort of there is a reason to be in the pub and everyone's staring at the screen and suddenly you become passionate about a sport.
Yeah.
Because everyone's backing, and let's face it, we love an underdog, and that's this film. And it's slowly seeing, like in this movie and in life, like we see sort of something unlikely then become a possibility. Mm. And then in sort of the crescendo of all that, like finally everyone's there. Mm. And they are glued to a screen. And it's so exciting, this idea that either you win or lose. And that's so, so intense.
And so I love intense. It. It's so it might hot. Be why people like sport.
Probably.
Like, yeah, the what's interesting is that there are obviously a lot of sports movies. Mm. But I can't think of any that is about... That is also a love story, but both people are athletes. Like, obviously, there's Rocky, and you've got Rocky and Adrienne kind of thing. But she's obviously not a boxer, you know? And this thing, the central, like, question of this movie, to me, is like, well, who matters more? You know? Because it is the sort of, like, central question is that, like, these two tennis players are meeting. He's on the way down. She's on the way up. This is his last chance to ever win Wimbledon ever. This is her first impression as someone at Wimbledon. And he, like, her playing declines when he's around, his playing improves. Mm. And they're kind of, there's no, like, huge fight. The huge fight that happens at the end of this movie is he, like, sneaks into her bedroom when she sort of specifically said, like, I kind of need my boundaries.
Like, go away.
Yeah.
Like, respectfully, but, like, leave me alone. I need to focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so fair.
So fine.
It's so fine.
Really okay. She takes it really well, I have to say. It's only like it's in retrospect that she's like, that was a real dick move.
Yeah. It was such a dick move.
Such a dick move.
And it's the thing where it's like Roger Ebert said about this movie, Wimbledon is a well-behaved movie about nice people who have good things happen to them. Like,
it's just nice. It's just so insulting. To make a film and do all that work and then someone be like, it's just, you know, nice. Nice people, nice things happen. Like, brutal. Oh my God. But it's really true. And I think it's what I really realised as well on the rewatch this year, which I've done every year since 2004, it really struck me how different their approaches and how sort of quintessentially it's kind of partly intrinsically who they are and where they're from. Mm. So she has this ability to be really outspoken and bold on the court and doesn't apologize. And which is sort of feels like it's attributed to her being American, but it's also, I just couldn't think of many films where a female sports person has been portrayed as someone, you know, she absolutely hates it when she loses. Mm. And she, you know, throws her toys out the pram and he's sort of been so gallant in the past, it's really wrecked certain moments for him. Mm. He's been too concerned with being nice and a gentleman that he's forgotten to fight for it. And it's kind of the rubbing off of each other. They're both going to learn so much about who they need to be as sports people. Oh my God. It's but true. They learn so much.
They learn so much in such a short time.
I know.
Oh,
it's magic.
But yeah,
it's magic.
That thing of like, it is so, it's funny because obviously if you're having this dynamic where you have one player on, like, who's on the verge of retiring and the other who's on the way up, like, I think there's like he's supposed to be 32, she's clearly in her very early 20s. Mm. And so that could very easily be kind of a yucky dynamic of being like, oh, he's the sort of like older professional. But she is so in the driver's seat from the beginning.
Yes, it is not him sort of like vampire-esque, like soaking up her youthful energy. And he is in awe of her.
Yeah.
And completely, very quickly loves her. And I think watching that dynamic, she really does drive a lot of that. She's there. She's the one.
She makes all the choices in the relationship.
Yeah, she does. Totally.
And that thing, so let's look track their relationship. Their sort of meet cute is very nice.
Their meet cute is in real, if it were me, I would scream, I would fall over in that shower and die.
Yeah.
It would be sort of a kind of murder mystery. Well, it wouldn't be a mystery because it would be obvious what happened, but she just handles it. I watched this film the summer it came out, so I was 17, and I watched it in my, like, deeply single state and just thought, that is so cool.
It's so cool.
And she's like my 12-21. It's like she knows this is her space. No yeah. one else is going to have this penthouse. Yeah. She calmly like turns off the shower. She's in the shower. He walks in. He's been given the wrong room key. And he's just, you know, rabbit in the headlights.
Massive suite.
Yeah.
First thing he sees is the size of this fucking room.
Yeah.
Like, oh, whoever has this room must be fucking powerful and rich.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just turns his head to the left and she's having this shower and you can't see much except for the outline of her body.
Mm-hmm.
And she just looks over sort of impassively and she's like, hello.
Yeah. Can I help you?
Yeah.
So calm and collected and sort of plays it completely. It was just amazing. I just thought that is how I want to be when
oh,
I'm around a boy.
Totally.
And then when he leaves, she sort of slightly like bites her sort of hand slightly. And yeah. I swear in that moment, there was a sexual awakening for me. It was like, I love you. I'm in love with you, Kirsten Dunst.
I'm in love with Kirsten Dunst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to get back to the sort of my theories on Kirsten Dunst later.
Perfect.
But right
Good.
Now we're going to track this love
yes.
story. But this thing of like, it's not, I think it's such like, I'm writing a lot of scripts at the moment,
uh-huh.
and obviously you study a lot of other scripts
yeah, yeah.
in order to see what works. And I think the temptation is to pick something really iconic, like When Harry Met Sally or something like that. But generally, those kinds of movies are iconic because they're different kind of thing, which means mm-hmm. they're a hard thing to study as a template.
Totally.
I think Wimbledon is the perfect rom-com script in terms of like, all the pieces are slotted in the perfect order, exactly as they should be. No one's reinventing the wheel. It's just a really fucking good wheel.
It's a really good wheel. It's such a good wheel. It's a ball. It's a tennis ball.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's as good a wheel as a tennis ball.
It's like nothing happens too early. Nothing happens too late.
Yeah.
You're never will they, won't they to the point that you're screaming
yeah.
at the screen. It's perfect. You know, and then you just get to be with them as they discover
yeah.
it.
It's that thing with a good movie where it's like, you know, somebody's at the wheel at all times. And mm-hmm. like, you can just be like, I'm not nervous. But this thing of like a good meet cute, I think it's, people are obsessed with meet cutes. And for people who don't know the lingo, it's like just the sort of the interesting sort of incident that makes our two leads meet and fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's often sort of like people bumping into each other and all that kind of stuff. And like you can sort of, or they're in a waiting room and he needs help filling out his forms or something. You know?
I know the phrase meet cute because of the film The Holiday. When this is explained to Kate Winslet.
It is.
He describes the meet cute. Yeah.
Me and Dolly are always saying that movie ruined our idea of what we thought our relationship with old people would be. Why is it never like that?
Why? Where's my lovely old gentleman?
Yeah. But so it's easy to come up with like a crazy situation.
Mm.
What's hard is to come up with a situation that is both like quirky and memorable and also says something about the characters.
Mm.
It's the thing of like, it's so elegantly done where it's like you learn so much about who that woman is. It's like, first of all, that she's an athlete, so she has a certain level of like relaxation when it comes to her body.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's such like an instrument for her, and
yes.
it's like something that
she runs
the factory, like, that is her body.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And so like, and it's like someone who's been looked at for a long time and who's mm-hmm. had their body looked at, and so therefore isn't that exposed when they're seen naked?
100%. And also, when you, it's so, I mean, I guess it matters when you see something. But when I watched this, I was younger than she was. Whereas now, I'm older than the character is. But there's something about anyone who has had to go to that level of sportsmanship or effort and athleticism. I'm going to say that wrong. Especially as a woman, because you are just so much more mature than your years. You
yeah.
have to be. You can't win Wimbledon at sort of 17, 16 or 17 and get to that level if you're, I mean, obviously there are loads of things about you that will be just as sort of wonderfully ridiculous as everyone else around you who's a teenager. But there is something about it, especially the body thing, this you're so aware of what it can achieve and how it has changed and what it's given you as it's changed, the strength that you get as you become a woman. So rather than it being this thing that then seemingly betrays you and you stop being a girl and you start being a woman, you suddenly get all this strength and it's, you see, I don't know, there's something in that in sport and it's really amazing. So someone much, much younger can hold themselves in a way that we only get to way later in life and go, you know what, it's fine. But it's, I don't know. I think there's something in that when it's handled in the right way, when sport is good.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing.
I got real goosebumps there while you were talking. I was really good. Really liked that bit.
Yay, women in sport.
Women in sport. I assume you're like me in that I don't really watch any sport, but very moved by the concept of women in sport.
Totally. I'm moved to tears of stuff I do not understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just love that someone does do it. And they've done it so well.
I saw an ad on the train yesterday. I think it was for like, it was like some crisps that were sponsoring tennis.
Right.
Or something. And it was
the
like
the perfect snack. Yeah. The loudest snack when it has to be so quiet.
And and it was like three female players on the poster, and it said, "When more of us play, all of us win."
Boom!
And I cried.
That's it.
On the train.
Your stuff. That's why I carry tissues. They really know how to tap in.
They do. Just the emotional concept of women playing sports.
Like, look at us. Playing sport.
Look at us go.
Look at us. Me included.
Me included.
I own some Lycra. I'm in this with you.
It's so insane.
So thick.
I know.
I love it so much. I'm like, off I go to buy some crisps, just like athletes.
Like, why? Serena Williams loves her Walker's Prawn cocktail.
She absolutely loves it. That's how she was. That's why she's won so many times.
She's become who she is. But the, okay, next, we kind of get an extension of her power then in the next scene that we see her with him, where he is just practicing running drills. And
yes.
She just sort of muscles in on his time and it's just totally. Like, starts hitting targets together. And she's so sexy.
She's so sexy.
Like, he's sexy, obviously. Yeah. He's like all sinewy and brown, the blonde hair and the blue, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that she's completely controlling the situation is so fucking fit.
Totally. And like, her dad comes over and he says, she's like, okay, you know, because I think he's her manager or something,
yeah, yeah.
Kind of like coach manager, something like that. Always a bad sign. And then he sort of says something, oh, I didn't see you as like a daddy's girl. So kind of teases her about it. But then she just immediately takes that sort of slight dig, slight flirt sort of thing and just lobs it and says, if you know, if you hit this one, I'll sleep with you.
Yeah.
I love just, she does it. She throws it away, that line. She just throws that line away. And then he misses. She's like, oh, too bad, you could have used the workout. I just, that was
so cool.
That's so cool. That's how I want to be when I talk to boys. Every time. I'm like, use that line.
And what's so great about it is, it's that thing of like, and she's so kind of, she's so like Jack the Lad as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell from her gait the minute she walks over to him while he's practicing that she's already made up her mind that she's gonna fuck him.
Absolutely.
He's got nothing to do with
it. Eyes on the prize. And, yeah. You know, he's her wild card.
Yeah. Ooh.
Just came up with that. That's crazy. No.
It's funny that we're like talking exclusively about her when this is like, you know, a film from his perspective, right?
It
like,
is. Yeah. I know. And I was thinking that today. Oh, yesterday when I was watching it, I thought it's been cast aside as female centric and therefore sort of or you know, romantic and therefore not relevant and kind of useless or again, yeah, sentimental garbage.
Sure, of course. Of course. We're all here.
Absolutely. But it's also it's interesting because it is so much about him and his inner thought. His inner thoughts, the kind of Radiohead going on, this sort of the sportsman that he is, but also the man he is at the point of, you know, kind of meeting himself on the court every day and growing. And then obviously the encounter of her. But I just feel it's a real, you could say he's the lead, but it's a two-hander. Yeah. That's who's really playing. The match is played between the two of them. It's kind of, they're both hitting things back and forth to each other constantly.
Yeah. Just like, and well, it's, the thing is, it's like, I wonder of the reason, because I was looking at like what else was happening in 2004, which is always interesting. I think for some reason for me, the couple of years just after 9/11 of like what was being written, what was being greenlit, what did they decide was like what people wanted to see this year kind of thing. Which is so interesting when a huge, huge thing happens like that. Like, everything is going to be a fallout in some way or another. So, like, that year, Sideways won Best Picture, which is the wine guys.
One. Yeah.
And it's also the year that, like, Eternal Sunshine came out.
Oh my God, that was the same year. That's amazing.
Same year. So it's like these kind of real sort of... There's a fucking lot of rom-coms came out this year, but there's this real sort of like slight shift to sort of mature rom-coms. Like, I would say that, like, I mean, that there aren't many ways that this is like the film Sideways, but there's a kind of calmness to it. There's like, there's neither film is trying to pretend, and same with Eternal Sunshine, that this is the first time that either of these people have fallen in love. You know, these are grown adults. Who are having adult feelings and adult responses to things, as opposed to, like, it's not Kate Hudson working at a magazine, you know what I mean?
And we all love that.
We love that too.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, it was in these years as well, like leading up to maybe like 2005 and 6, it was the last year of the rom-com, and then it started becoming the comedy, the com-rom, which is heavier on the comedy, with like sort of like, you know, with an essence of romance, whereas these were romantic that had a sort of lightness to them.
Yes.
And it was, this is still in that era, which is my favourite era.
My favourite era.
And I think there's also something, it's very sort of, it's very unifying. We see, like, in the final sort of, in the final match, we've got America versus the UK. But it's sort of, there's a way that they found a way around it to make it sort of stick together rather than it being a battle. And I don't know. There's something in that. There 100%. Is. Because they would have filmed it in 2003. It would have been commissioned in, or sort of green lit maybe.
Yeah.
2001, 2002. It's sort of, please shower us in softness and warmth and familiarity and love and, you know, relative escapism.
Yeah, but in a way that still feels grounded and real. And it's
nothing too existential.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, I mean, immediately, I feel like obviously Eternal Sunshine is Spotless Mind is that. But there's something, I don't know. Yeah, there's something in that.
There's something in the tone of those movies that have something in common, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. I just feel it, you know?
Yeah.
And also Alfie, so there was definitely like a British invasion thing happening, right?
Definitely. This is also only like two or three years after Bendit Like Beckham as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was sort of, again,
a huge sleeper hit, right?
Yeah, a small film, British film that exploded.
Yeah.
And it's about sport and it's about women in sport.
Yeah.
And so kind of moving on from that, but then... Like, imagine if we did that but made it super romantic.
Yeah, yeah. And you can really see the formula, right? And like I said before, it is like it is a formulaic movie, but the formula's done really well. It's like you could see, it's like a working title movie. It's big budget. Like, obviously they filmed a lot of it at fucking Wimbledon. Like, they spent money on this film. But they're like, okay, we want Notting Hill because that did well.
Yeah.
We want like a very famous girl and the sort of like the American sort of starlet coming in. That dynamic is great. And we want that sort of Bend It Like Beckham sort of British sport, summertime, outdoorsy thing. And it all just comes together in this like really beautiful way.
Yeah, and something familiar in his sort of Hugh Grantness of it. And, you know, from him clambering up the side of walls to get into a bedroom, which
very
is
Hugh Grant.
Invasive and yet in that moment charming, which is very confusing, and sort of all of that and his kind of austere family dynamic in a house that may as well be Howard's End. I don't know, but it's very, you know.
I thought that was so interesting in that, like, this is one of those movies that you watch and you can't believe Richard Curtis had nothing to do with it. And I imagine he was a bit pissed. I bet he was like, what the fuck, guys? Like,
there is a point. There is a point when he's being interviewed I mean, I was about to be like, I don't want to spoil anything, but I imagine everyone listening to this has seen this film. Mm. And if you haven't, stop now and watch it.
Yeah.
But when he's being interviewed at the end and he's like, I'm here today about love. And he nearly says love, actually. He says, instead, I forgot to make a note of it. He says, love, really.
Yes,
I'm like,
yes,
hear about love,
is.
Really.
Yes.
But I was like, it could be love, actually. And then we could just mold them together and then start that movie. And then, I don't know. But I just, yes, it's shocking he is not. His paw prints are all over this film.
Yeah, but there are tiny little bits. It completely feels like a derivative of Richard Curtis. But in some ways, I feel like it's slightly more advanced than Richard Curtis.
Yeah.
In different ways. Like there's this bit where in his opening monologue, he says, like, a lot of what makes a great tennis player is hunger, real hunger. And as you can see, I've never been hungry. And he's like driving his Porsche up to his parents' like stately home. And like the thing about Richard Curtis movies is often they seem to think that everybody in the world just lives this way and everyone's fucking amazingly wealthy and lives in Notting Hill and their friends own restaurants and things and like all that shit.
That's normal.
But like I do think this movie seems to acknowledge that it is a tiny world within a bigger world.
Yeah.
You know?
It sort of wears that on its sleeve a bit more. In just even, I guess, as a sport, tennis is relatively...
Elite,
yeah. It's not sort of, you're not... And it being a solo sport and not a team sport, it's less likely that you're just going to knock around with your mates playing tennis.
Yeah, yeah.
In the streets, just not what you're doing. And so it's the acknowledgement of that and him sort of... I don't know. He has this energy that... he's so apologetic, but he's like, I know, I get it. Yeah, I'm that guy.
I have a Porsche.
Yes, I'm from that world. Yes.
Yeah.
And I've never really, for all that wealth and privilege and opportunity, I've always sort of fallen at that hurdle.
Mm.
And there's something really refreshing about that in a film, because at least it starts at that point rather than pretending it doesn't really exist. But also it gives, you end up backing him anyway. You still want him to succeed even though he's from that world.
Yeah.
Because he feels unlike that somehow. Like he's never had a place.
Yes, yeah. That like privileged but not quite privileged enough. But like, yeah. That's even possible. Mm. But the thing is, like, for a movie, again, that is centered around one of the largest sporting events in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is a curiously low stakes, which is what makes it a great sort of background movie. It's like, the worst thing that's going to happen to him is that he's going to be the director of a country club.
I know. With Celia Imrie just waiting to pounce on him.
I know.
She can't wait. I mean,
love her.
You'd be so lucky.
I love her. Women.
I know, I love them. Just sort of doing essentially what is... not okay, but just sort of in such a charming way. Backstrokes.
Yeah.
Or backhands or whatever.
Shut up, Sylvia.
Shut up, Sylvia. Poor Sylvia. She really gets it in this film.
She's trying
to have a PIMS and a good time and maybe an affair.
The whole thing with his parents is great as well.
It's really good.
And I don't know if you're a fan of the classic of A Little Princess.
Oh my God.
She's Miss Minchin.
I know. I know. I know. Her hair. Her face.
Triggered.
I was so afraid of her.
I was so immediately not on her side. I was like, why do I hate this woman? I was like, oh, it's Miss Minchin.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that film when I was growing up was huge. I was obsessed.
Mm.
And
oh my God.
She really, really scared me. And I realized, I don't know if I immediately realised when I was watching it in the cinema, age 17, but sort of since I've obviously looked her up and been like, oh my God, of course. You know, I mean, you know, she was in Help, very cool. Beatles, who knew? But yeah, that she's in that movie.
She was in Help?
Yeah.
As in the Beatles movie? Oh,
yeah.
I thought you meant like The Help, which is
the
not,
Help,
which
no,
is not
like
a
that.
Cool movie and it's a very bad movie.
No, I'm talking Help by the Beatles.
That's fucking cool.
I'm talking screaming women running after four sort of Liverpudlians. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
I thought you felt like you needed to explain the context
Help.
Of the
you
Beatles.
Were like, the Beatles were...
to anyone who doesn't know at home, the Beatles.
Oh, God.
But this whole... I think it's so... It almost suffers from being too subtle, this movie, because there's like... But like, if you're someone who watches a lot, as we are, it really rewards you on repeat watching, because you can really see everyone's a full person.
Yeah.
This thing of like, the first thing his mum says is like, "Darling, how are you? You look gaunt."
You look like, gaunt, and he's like,
"Thank you.
Thank you very much." It's so rewatchable.
Yeah.
In all its sort of, the script is brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's so detailed. His brother, and how he.
James McAvoy in cycling gear for 2 hours.
It's like, lovely. Who sort of is obviously, so then you start to kind of add up, okay, so they're, it's a kind of sporty family. They've both been involved to some semi-professional and professional level of sport. They're super into that. He like, he's always toppling off his bike when he's going in to make bets against his brother. But as his brother's doing better, he falls off his bike less. It's like everyone regains their sort of skill and balance. It's really wild.
It's so good. And this thing of like, the first thing his family say to him like is, have you sorted our Wimbledon tickets yet?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And it's like, it's such a well-observed thing of like, any person who is like a famous or notable person in their family.
What can you do for us? What, have you done that thing yet?
Like, even the most loving families, it becomes sort of boring and like annoying and being like, oh God, yeah, you're back in with this kind of thing. Like, have you done that? Have you sorted my thing out? And it has a strangely emotional conclusion. Like, there's a bit where when he's doing better, his mum, Mrs. Minchin, says like, I think we can all be a bit more supportive, don't you think, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're like,
more
oh,
loving of each other.
They're more loving. And like, they're sort of slowly learning. And there's a bit that like made me cry. I
wasn't
surprised.
What bit made you cry?
Okay, so obviously at the end when he's doing really well. Oh, you're starting to cry.
Don't.
You're starting to cry at the notion of me.
The
crying.
Notion of you crying at a film I've cried at.
Yeah. So it's obviously, it's the end. It's like every, it's like the last match when he's against a horrible American boy. And everyone's watching all around the country. And like,
I know the bit you're going to say.
There's actually two bits.
Is it the, when the dad leans over and tells her he's just said because she couldn't hear?
Oh, no.
No. Okay, no,
bit.
No, no, you go.
The bit with the dad, I was like, we'll go back to that.
Yeah.
that was, he's shouting at the screen and the mum goes, he can't hear you, you know, and he goes, yes, he can.
I know. Gone. I was gone.
Gone.
I rewatched it again. I watched it last night again and this morning, and I was watching it. I was like, I can't handle this.
And what was the bit you cried?
So that bit made me cry because she's been avoiding listening to it, watching it, engaging in it. It's like she can't
get her hopes up again.
She can't do it again.
Yeah.
She's, and they're not speaking to each other, the husband and wife, and they won't. They're kind of, he's in this treehouse, and then there's been this rabbit that's been eating all her food, and then he's caught the rabbit and they kiss, and I'm just like, yes.
Yes.
Woo. Passionate snog. Love it. There's this bit in the last match where he sort of, he just drops his, can't remember the name of it.
Tennis
racket. That's it. It's really taught me a lot about tennis. He drops his tennis racket and the ball boy, who's
been hit in
very,
the face,
very central to this film.
Yeah.
He picks it up and he says, oh, thanks, I'll be needing that. And there's a sort of ripple of laughter throughout the court and people sort of realising what he said. And his dad hears it and sort of, she hasn't quite heard why everyone's laughing. And he sort of repeats it back to her. And she just, she laughs, and in that way of, she's so proud of him.
Uh-huh.
And also thinking, her face is kind of saying, oh, he's always been so funny.
Oh.
Or like, oh, how charming. And I taught him so well. And it's just, it's really sweet. They're just like,
such
this little
tiny
family
moment.
Unit. And it's a tiny little bit.
Yeah.
But I find if I'm watching sport events and things like that, when someone wins or when something happens and they run to their people.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's their mum or a cousin or a best friend or a partner or they're like a baby that they like lift up.
Yeah.
I just can't handle it. It's the most beautiful thing in the world.
And especially with something like tennis, because like when you're watching a football game and they win and you see all the lads hugging each other.
Yeah.
And you're like, look at them. They've been through it all together. And that'll make me cry. Mm-hmm. But there's something separate and specific about you've watched someone do this individual pursuit.
Yeah, they're kind of like lonely out on this
So
thing,
lonely.
Out, and we're all watching them alone out on this sort of
Yeah.
Court. Like, and then they come running back into their life.
Yeah,
and it's just really beautiful.
And it reminds me that like, it doesn't matter how individualistic a sport or any pursuit is, there are always these people that are surrounding it, whether they're supportive or not, whether they're dealing with it or not, they're still kind of there, and they always will be, you know? And the other part that made me cry, and it really took me by surprise, was when the brother, the James McAvoy character, is watching it with his like loser friends, who I love. I love his loser friends.
I love them.
My passion is chat rooms.
There's a bit where he says, she says, picky, like, let's take a picture.
Yeah.
And he says, just a pity. And it's almost like...
What does that mean?
As in, she's like, are you... He interprets it like, are you picky?
Yeah.
And he's like, just a pity. Like, it's a pity I am. Otherwise, you'd be great. And she just thinks it's about a photo.
Oh,
and I'm like, cheeky
that's so
little.
So clever.
So clever. But again, rewatch. But so he's sitting with all his mates.
Yeah. And it's not the final game, but it's like in the games leading up to the final where he's doing really well and no one can believe it. And maybe the semis. And the friend of his says, like, oh, how does he take the stress? And then James McAvoy, like sort of to himself, just sort of says, how does he take the stress? And it's like, it's the first time he's actually realized how awful and hard and lonely his brother's life is, and how he's never really seen it before because he's always been the star brother. But like, it's like he's revealing the sort of the ocean of melancholy. He's only just seeing it for the first time. And that really got me.
Really got me. It gets me as well that they're... The whole sort of dynamic of the family has been so distant and disconnected.
Yeah.
And he sort of, it's the dream of any child. Yeah. He manages to restore his parents' marriage back to happiness. And you're like, only I could play this sport beautifully. It's like, no, it's just a really beautiful moment. I think,
yeah,
like you were saying, in solo sport, even if it's one person, there's so many people behind you or just... Even on like
behind,
a
mind, around you.
Around. And just like when you were little, like driving you to events or just sort of dropping you off at places. And it's big. It's massive. I love it.
This is another. This part also made me well up and it's like less subtle. It was definitely put there to make me well up and therefore is worth less. But still, it triggered a response. When the concierge at the hotel says, we would just be... so happy. He says, like, it's something really basic, like he's so happy if you won or he's so happy. So proud. We would be so proud.
Yeah. When the lift doors open and everyone is there clapping him.
Yeah.
And then he says at the end, he's like, I don't even like tennis.
But that's it. That's what... That's why it's so moving, because it's like the thing of like, it's a funny joke of like, he's delivers this incredibly sincere message to this man, and like then he's like, I don't know what's come over me, because that's what happens. It comes over you, and like these things that you thought you didn't care about can just like unite masses of people who have nothing in common together, and that's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
I love sport in theory.
I know. I feel like there's so many moments of that, though, like this, especially because he's the underdog. So he's a wild card at Wimbledon. Mm. And he goes in to the dressing room for the first time at the beginning. And it's the dressing rooms are full and there's so many people. And he's seeing the kit guy who gives everyone towels and their key. And he obviously knows him. He says later on in the film, it's his 13th Wimbledon. And, you know, he's familiar with the kind of backstage of it all, which I also was like fascinated by. It's sort of like
the world feels very big. It feels very like natural and real, the way he occupies that world. It's like a second home to him, kind of thing.
There's a canteen, there's a sort of little, you know, you can nip in and out of watching other people's matches, which I'm sure you can completely do if you're playing in Wimbledon. And he's sort of like, he's there, and then by the end he's the only one left in that dressing room.
Yeah.
No other people are there. There are no other matches on that day.
There's no one left.
And
it's the final.
Because it's the final. And he's offered to go into the number one dressing room.
Yeah.
And he says, no, I'm really happy. I'm happy here. And he says, yeah, I told them you'd say that.
Oh.
And I just love, he sort of starts to be very seen. At the beginning, like slowly he does an interview post-match, and he's trying to announce
that he's retiring.
This really big deal for him that he's retiring.
The culmination of his entire life's work.
Yeah, he's going to retire at 31, which on the rewatch I was like, my God, this is huge. But obviously, like most sports people do, like that's, you're done. And no one will listen to him. And then by the end, he's right in the center. And he, that sort of place for him, he's kind of very uncomfortable. And she is someone who makes him own that space because she...
Yeah.
It's magic.
Let's talk about Kirsten Dunst again.
Yes, because their first date is super cute. All the dates are cute. Very cute.
It's the thing as well of like, I think Roger Ebert pointed out in the review of being like, it's so refreshing to have a rom-com where the two people actually have stuff to talk about. Like, it's not just like, you're cute. No, you're cute. It's like they have the whole profession they share. And like, you can tell, like, it feels, they feel like tennis players talking to each other. You know, it feels very real. And like, the whole thing of them, like, it's the only film that makes exercising with your partner look fun.
I know. And when I see it in real life, I'm like, go away.
Go away.
Don't do that on in your own time. But they look... I mean, yeah, her outfit that she goes running with him.
Oh, his in, like wearing his like big jersey and Converse. Yes, running in Converse. Can you imagine?
Running in Converse, in giant Converse. She's going to have blisters. She's not going to be able to play the next day. Yeah. But, you know, somehow she gets through it. Super cute. The soundtrack also I was obsessed with.
It's such a naughty soundtrack.
David Gray. If you don't cry to David Gray, you're dead inside.
What song is it again? It's not Babylon.
This Year's Love.
Oh, yeah.
I think, is it called
it's
that?
This Year's Love.
Oh, my God. It's heartbreaking. God. And also, the shooting star.
Yes, the comet.
The comet. The comet that
it's
appears
a bit
in this film.
That bit.
It's sort of, it's like, ugh. I was saying it today to my husband. I was like, and it's only got 2 weeks and it's going to disappear. He's like,
symbolism.
Yes. Yeah. And he looked at me and just said, yeah, I've got that bit. Just sort of, I know you're obsessed with this film.
Yeah.
And I know that there are many, many layers of complexity to it that you're very obsessed with. But the shooting star significance?
I don't need to explain that.
Like, I am a grown human being who can function on their own. I do understand.
I actually can read.
Yeah, it was really, I was like, okay, don't worry.
This is funny, actually, because I was... trying to get my boyfriend to watch this last night and he would not be convinced. just disappeared upstairs where he belongs. I kind of imagine, you know, he said earlier on that very good point about how this was just before rom-coms became com-roms.
Uh-huh.
It's like before Judd Apatow sort of like ruled over the entire output. Which I like a lot of the Judd Apatow movies. I'm not saying they're a bad thing. I wish that this kind of movie had been allowed to carry on, you know, in a dignified fashion.
Yeah, I think there's space for both.
But this thing of like, you could tell that this sort of movie was created to fulfill the brief of, we want a date movie, not just a movie that women watch together, but the movie that men and women will watch together.
Yes.
So this thing of like, it is a robust sports movie with good tennis matches, excitingly shot tennis matches,
yeah,
and like real sports stakes, and also a totally convincing love story. And I think
we're two incredibly hot human beings.
Yes, and very charismatic, and like you're just like, and believable and good. And you could, I think, probably why it failed, was because it needed to lean harder in one other direction. Like, I'm glad it didn't because I love the film that it is.
Yeah,
but it's like, it's almost like not romantic enough to be like a classic romance movie of the genre that like girls will watch at sleepovers for the rest of time.
Uh-huh.
And it's not enough of a sports movie to be something a man will actually watch with his girlfriend and be happy about, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Because I think it's, when I've been watching it in the past, it's a film that quite often a partner will sort of look in on and be like, oh, okay, you're watching that film. And then sort of slowly, sort of halfway through, they start to just kind of linger around a little bit. You know,
Oh my God, film. You're doing the,
and then
you're
by
doing
the end,
thing. Yes.
And then by the end, they're going, God, you know, this is really well shot. And you're like, I know! And then they're sort of in it. But it's one of those. So I imagine, just to your point there, like, it's quite hard to get the standards.
Oh my God. And like
through the door of
Jessie's
a cinema.
Jessie's putting her hands on her hips and it just triggered me into like every fight I've ever had with Gavin, where he just like, he's about to go to the gym and he'll just stand in front of the TV with his hands on his hips.
Yeah.
Like, squinting at the TV because he has glasses on. What is this in? What is this? I'm like, either stay or go. Don't make me feel uncomfortable. Like, my girly movie is not enough for you. Like,
totally. Yeah, 100%. But it's that, it's got that to it. So I imagine that would have been the reason why you'd have to convince someone to come with you to watch it. Mm. I watched it solo in a cinema. It was my first ever solo cinema trip.
Oh, I why? Took my,
well, I think because... Why did I watch it on my own?
Yeah, like, why oh. I was like, this is the movie, I need to go see this. It doesn't matter who's coming with me.
I think, okay, so at that point in my life, I left school, I was away, I did ballet at the time, so mm-hmm. I was, like, studying away, and I really, really wanted to watch this film. I think it came out in, like, September or something. Mm. And it was really, really early on in this term, and I just hadn't made any friends. Oh. And I just really wanted to watch this movie. And so I went one weekend when we were allowed out, oh. like sort of like a cat scraping at a door, let me out. And I went on my own to the cinema, and it was a discovery that it's one of my favourite things in the world to do, mm. is to go and watch movies on my own in the cinema. So I will take in snacks and wine and just my own bag of sort of deliciousness, and I get to watch any film I want. And instead of feeling like slightly embarrassed sometimes about like, mm. yes, this is what I've chosen to pay mm. to see and what I want to watch, I just get to completely adore something I want to see.
It's so
and that's
true.
What I got in this film for the first time. And aww. I remember leaving and being like, I need to tell everyone I know about this movie.
That is the thing of seeing a movie alone, because like, yeah, I do it a bit, but probably not as much as you do. In that, like, I'm always like, oh, well, I want to have a movie I can talk about, go for a drink with somebody afterwards, and have a chat about it, kind of yeah. thing. And then that thing of just like, oh, I guess I'll go home, kind of thing. Always feel a bit lonely. But the thing is, every movie I've ever seen alone, I remember every scene of, because I'm not distracted thinking what the other person thinks of it.
Totally. Yeah, I'm being like, have I wasted their afternoon?
Yeah.
Or, are they going to kiss me? I don't know. And it's sort of all that kind of tension and things. Like, this is a movie that I felt like that with. And I don't know. There's something in the lead up, the slow build of their relationship that felt, it feels so safe.
Yes.
There's something really safe about it. It's the structure. That's what you were
yeah.
saying. It's perfectly, perfectly structured.
It is.
There's no moment when you're thinking, what have I... What yeah. am I watching?
Yes.
You're just like, I know what I'm watching and I love it.
And also, like, even the sort of quote-unquote villains are, with the exception of the horrible American tennis player who's like fairly mustache-twirling bad boy.
Oh, yeah. Like, that headband is
unforgivable. The headband of a villain.
Absolutely. You don't get a headband like that if you're a goodie. They don't let you go on screen like that.
But even, like, the sort of, like, you know, antagonistic characters, like Jon Favreau as sports agent and Sam Neill as her father... They're like, they sometimes behave in ways that you don't want them to, because they go against our two favorites getting together and being mm-hmm. happy. But they're all behaving in ways that are very reasonable for who they are.
Yeah.
Like the Sam Neill character, like the dad just being like, she needs to focus. This is like one of the greatest, biggest moments of her career. And like, you can't be a distraction. And like, just
totally.
Literally wait 10 days.
Just chill. When they run away after the Slazenger? That's
oh,
a
yes.
hard word to say.
It is.
Slazenger
change
party.
It, Slazenger.
Because they're at this party and they sort of pretend that they don't really know each other.
That is such a fucking hot scene.
So hot. And then the agent goes away and he slips away, and then they come in. She's like, how are you? Oh, yeah, no, I'm good. And it's just
yeah.
really sweet. He's like, you look gorgeous. And it's just, it's so nice. And then there's some action in the Millennium. Is it the Millennium Wheel? Is that what it's called?
The London Eye.
The London yeah. Eye. Millennium Wheel.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millennium Wheel.
Say what you see, Jess. Say what you see. It's the London Eye. And they're jumping into the car. And she's just like, I've never had anyone fight for my honour before.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I love that line as well because it's sort of, she's going, I didn't need you to do that, maybe, but it was hot. And
yeah.
Despite all the things I know, I just want to kiss you right now. Just like the, I love it. Sorry.
I haven't even realized that was a fantasy until I watched that scene. The scene of, like, obviously every woman has the fantasy of like the very toxic fantasy of really? Their boyfriend punching out some arsehole who's like been mean to them, disrespectful to them.
Yeah, because in real life that would terrify me and I'd be raging. Yeah. I'd be like, oh my God, what are you doing? I'd be running away.
It is that scene in Bridget Jones where she goes up to Darcy after, she's like, you're supposed to be nice and normal. But yeah, obviously that everyone on some level wants that to happen for them, and that's not a problem. I'm not here to shame anyone for that. But the scene before where it's like they're being introduced by the Jon Favreau character and that thing of like they're smiling at each other and they're doing this really perfunctory chat of like, oh yeah, Lizzie, I hear you're high hopes for you,
and
like,
she always calls him Peter Colt.
Yeah
I love it. Pizza
that,
Colt.
That thing of like they're saying this very perfunctory dialogue, but they're smiling because they've shagged.
Yes, they've shagged, and then they had fish and chips afterwards.
When he brings over the fish and chips, and she's like, "I'm not hungry."
I know she's not hungry. She takes the little because it's just after the first montage, and he's been getting again amazing. There's a montage of someone nervously getting ready for a date, and it's the guy.
And
he's trying on all the different underwear.
We see quite a lot of his dick in that.
Do we?
No, we see a good shape of it.
Good shape.
It looks nice.
Yeah, it looks lovely. Well done. Love 15. I just don't know what that means, but it's...
It sounded
naughty. It's tennis related. And then he's slipping his jeans on and you realise he's going commando. Like there's a sort of mutual agreement of... I know what's happening. We both know what's happening, but she just leads it so brilliantly in a sort of dress that should be frumpy, but it just works.
Yeah.
It's a floaty floral print. It's very chic. And she just puts these fish and chips aside. And then sort of later on, they're just kind of looking out on her balcony. And I think she calls him in again.
Yeah.
And he says something like, great, like round two or something.
Yeah.
But it's just so, it's just very sexy.
It's very sexy. And it's like a believable way that you know that like tennis players who are on tour together, they do fucking act. Like, you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
Like it's like a very, the fact that they've had sex isn't the crux of their romance. It's like they could very easily just fucking, and go. And they make a really good joke about it as well. Where they're like, oh, you know, life on the tour, another city, another girl. And then he goes, oh, yeah, Leslie.
She's like, who's Leslie? And it's so cute and flirty because they both get it. They've both been in that world.
Yeah.
But this is something different. I think it's that date that they go on, which I feel when I was younger, I thought the restaurant.
In
no, the one in the restaurant.
The sushi
before.
Restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Imagine your food going round on a little thing.
I thought that was amazing.
I rewatched it. I was like, is that Yo sushi?
It looked like the Yo sushi on the South Bank.
Yeah. I was like, that's where they are. And then realizing
Yo sushi.
I know. It's like, you could be anywhere right now.
Yeah.
Also, a beautiful sort of lack of, there are moments when we see them sort of like chased by paparazzi, but realistically, it would be carnage.
Yeah.
And yet they're sort of walking through I mean, you know it's a really good date when you just keep walking all the way home and the shoes are off and suddenly she's sort of really dinky and tiny and but she's still so powerful. Yeah. He's looking at her with such in such awe. She's so strong and the way that she's in the, on the date, she says, "I remember your match.
Yeah.
The first time I saw you and you did this and I thought you were such." And then he's waiting for this compliment of being like a gentleman, like I was so nice to the kid or something. Yeah, yeah. She's like, "I thought you were such an ass for losing like that when you were playing so beautifully." She's like, "What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why did you do that to yourself? That's mad." And I think, obviously, slowly by the end, like she's sort of taken some of that heart and realized that you can love and win.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's sort of learned so much about sort of you can win and still be a good guy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but the beginning of that, and that's where like the David Gray song comes in.
Living
and
they're just
slowly like walking, and then it comes in again in Brighton, and this whole thing, they just really connect to each other, and it's more than just two very athletically talented people hooking up on tour.
Yeah.
And I think it baffles both of them in different ways.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It's so good. Which is like what brings me back to the thing of like, it's a rom-com, but it feels mature. It feels like it's like not trying to trick you into this puritanical idea. It's like the first time she's ever seen a dick, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kind of want to talk about Kirsten Dunst, the figure, because like this is actually the second Kirsten Dunst movie I've watched in a week. I'm doing another podcast where she sort of features. It's like over the years, particularly in the last couple of years, I've noticed this enormous love that has grown for her. Like I think people have always liked her.
Yeah.
But like online, you see a lot of like, oh, fucking Kirsten Dunst, queen of the world kind of thing.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, where do you think that's come from? So suddenly.
It's so weird because I think when she first sort of was on the scene, she was a sort of prodigy of a child actor. Incredible. Like her work in the
Interview with Winona. Empire.
Yes. Yeah. And then the Winona Ryder Little Women.
Yes.
She's so good in that film. The way she burns her Joe's manuscript.
So good.
With so much hate. I hate you, Jo March. And she's so brilliant in that. And Jumanji and all the kind of like slowly coming up into the world. And then she was in a series of kind of rom-coms or like teen movies, but they were always better than that.
Yeah.
They weren't just these.
Even like Get Over It, I think, is very good.
Yeah, and
her least
Bring It On, another sports movie.
Yeah, and definitely an upcoming episode, I would think. But yeah, like so good.
And just like so, I don't know. She has always had this sort of real like attack energy in her roles. This sort of like fearlessness. Being obsessed is like such a horrible word sometimes because it sounds so creepy, but just so in awe of her for so long. I always thought she was beautifully, oddly gorgeous.
Yes.
And sexy. And
she is oddly gorgeous.
Yeah.
But she's not Reese Witherspoon, who has this like, you know, very like a doll's face. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And as Kirsten Dunst got older, like she has like sort of like a quite strong features, got a strong jaw. Like she's like, there's almost something a little bit like beautifully masculine about her face.
I just love, and there's always been, she's able to be so raw, so brilliantly. Like Marie Antoinette was a movie that I watched when I got to uni. I think I watched it in the first maybe, again, like few weeks of having moved to London. And I immediately bought loads of velvet ribbon and started tying it around my neck and my hair. Again, hadn't met many friends yet. There's a running thing. Like, and I just, there's something in the films that she chose to do and the way that she's done it. She's never sort of, I always feel like she's never sold out. She's always gone her own way.
There's a real
steadiness to her. I don't know anything about her.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. And she's sort of constantly curious and not afraid to say things about what it's like to have worked for a very long time and what it's like to be a woman and mental health and things like that. And I think rom-coms as well are so hard to do. Mm. I found a clip of Paul Bettany talking about Wimbledon, and he said it is so, so hard to be that charming and sort of soft and kind of like constantly through a film and make it feel believable. But she can do it effortlessly. It's magic. And she's got something about her.
There's really something.
And it's almost like now she's, now we've accepted that she's a grown up. We can respect her work.
Yeah.
Whereas when she was younger and that talented, it's like the world had to sort of somehow keep her as, well, she maybe only does those films because her and Sofia Coppola get on really well, or, you know, I don't know. Maybe,
no, I think,
do you know
I,
that thing?
No, I know just, exactly. It does. It really feels in the last couple of years, and maybe this is just the social channels and the algorithms that are, I feel like every other day I'm seeing another person be like, how about fucking Kirsten Dunst though? What a legend. And it's so brilliant, because I feel like it's exactly as you said. It feels like she's accumulated this body of work that is so it touches sort of millennials and our sort of timeline on so many very emotional levels. Like, it's Little Women and Interview with a Vampire. It's like Bring It On and Get Over It and all those teen movies. Uh-huh. And then like it's that kind of thing of like, as she was getting intellectually curious, so were we. And
totally.
She started doing Marie Antoinette and Melancholia and like all these like real risks. But, and like also simultaneously, like having a lot of boyfriends, which I love. I love that she's just someone who's always had a lot of boyfriends.
Also, oh my God, I've completely forgotten until this moment, but Spider-Man.
Of course, I don't really give a fuck about that, but like, yeah, of course.
But like, there was this moment, but like the
peeling,
the upside down kiss, the peeling off of that mask, the kiss, and then her peeling it back up.
Yeah.
And this sort of in the rain. I was gone.
I think it's this thing where, like, we feel really reassured by her as a generation.
Yes.
Because she's never let us down.
She's never let us down.
She's never done something weird.
She's freaking cool.
She doesn't say stupid shit.
No, and she's kind of, she's just doing it and picking things that are really odd and curious and not sort of getting caught up in just all the things that you can so easily get caught up in the minute you're not sort of 18 anymore and you work on screen or you're known publicly. And she's not sort of on every red carpet.
Yeah.
And yet the ones she's been on have been iconic. And sort of, I don't know, I've always looked to her for that. She's kind of like all American, but also not at the same time. There's something
a little bit kind of European about her.
Yes.
Or something.
Yes.
I don't care about star signs at all, except
I say that all the time, and yet
I
look into them all the time.
I don't care at all, except when a celebrity I like is the same star sign as me.
Which is?
She's a Taurus.
Ah.
And I feel like it makes total sense.
You're like, come on, she's one of, like, she's we're like, the same.
But I feel she's very steady, very rooted to the earth, you know?
Yeah, I feel that earthiness. I do! I think it's amazing! That's why she plays such good tennis. Also, in this film, she trained for 8 months.
Yeah.
To sort of get to, because she wanted it to feel and look realistic. And I think, I don't know, especially the time, like tennis players, like, and how people train and the way athletes look changes all the time. But
it's
like, they did a
someone
really
who's doing
good
tennis
job
lessons
of it.
Right now, it's hard. Like, oh, it's fucking hard to even look like you can play tennis.
When I was growing up at school, like, obviously, like, PE always had kind of different sports on rotation. And I remember one summer, it was time to learn tennis, and we just lay on the tennis, on like, it wasn't a tennis court, it was the football, it was the cage where you could play football, and they put temporary things up, and we just lay down and sunbathed and watched boys.
Dreamy.
So, it was lovely, but I learned nothing.
Yeah,
but tennis, I've always, it just looks, it's so hard
yeah,
to even return a serve. Insane.
I know. Every time I do it, I'm like, who's this? Who's she? All right. Is there anything else we want to say? Oh, here's the thing I want to say. I feel like one of the very few flaws about this film is that there are a few what I feel like are deleted scenes or scenes that they... One of them is... and like, I love the whole subplot with his best friend, who is Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones.
I didn't realise that was him until today.
Yeah.
and it blew my mind because somewhere in my brain, I thought he'd had this, he was in this film, mm-hmm. which, you know, and he had, he was really great. And then his career just disintegrated. And it's like, no, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
His career is huge. And I just had never put the two together. I think I just, like, I'm so sort of protective of this movie. It's almost like they, yeah. everyone only exists within this film.
So true. And I feel like, okay, so that's the one of the scenes is that they're all building up to like, oh, you're going to have to go against your best friend
yes.
on the court. And they never show it.
Yeah, they don't
show
it.
They just skip straight to like, well, you won.
He just kind of gets hit because he knows his friend's got like a bad elbow.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I take it is tennis elbow. I don't know. But like, then he gets like smacked in the chest by this tennis ball. And then that's it. And they're kind of...
Yeah.
Talking to each other post-match.
In a steam room. Being like, oh, don't worry, I still love you. Okay, love you. Kind of thing.
But I think the most unrealistic thing to ever happen. But I loved it.
That's definitely something that, like, obviously they shot it a bunch of times and it just didn't look right or whatever. And they just got rid of it. And the other thing around that character, that I think there was probably more gay stuff in this movie in the original cut.
Do you think?
I couldn't figure... So there's the two lesbian characters that we see really briefly.
Yes!
I loved that.
I know, I love that. She's like, this is my partner.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, again, in that environment of this is sport, this is... You know, we all know each other. And this beautiful openness, which again, just very casual. Yeah, and I loved that. Not,
yeah, just,
2004, just, well done.
It's just like a lovely night. It's like, it's nothing... There's no joke. There's no thing of like, oh, of course she's a lesbian. It's like, here's just these two women having lunch. This is my partner. Hello. You know, kind of thing. But also, there's a few nods to that. I think that the Jamie Lannister character is also gay. But I think they've cut around it. Like, they decided in post that, like, maybe not. Because there's...
Okay, maybe.
Here's my evidence.
Okay.
There's the scene where at the very beginning where he says he's going to go on a date with like an Irish heiress or something.
Right.
But the way the scene is played is like they're kind of looking at each other and being like, okay, all right, of course you are kind of
thing. Yeah, because doesn't he say like, oh, you know, he says, does she have a sister? And he says, oh, alas, an only child or something.
Something like that. But it feels a bit like we both know this isn't a real date. That's how I only read it after I saw this other evidence where he was saying like, oh, what's his weakness? Is like, oh, men in leather shorts.
Yes. And yeah, because he was like Wagner and like,
yeah.
And when they're walking down the street and Paul Bettany's trying to call to get hold of Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
And he like he doesn't have reception or something and he ends up getting her dad or something like that. But he goes, oh, 1 second, and just sort of runs over to a shop window to sort of look in the shop window. And I don't know.
What Paul Bettany does or...
No, the best friend.
Oh, right.
So it's like...
that a little bit of a...
I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know.
Yeah. I think there's something in it.
Maybe.
And there's jokes about sausages, which could be a German thing, but it could also be a German and gay thing.
Oh, so I wish they had,
curious.
Like...
I could be wrong. It could all just be the leather thing. Could be like some weird German joke I don't get either. But like, yeah, if the writers of the screenplay would like to get in touch, I promise I won't tell anyone. But if you intended that character to be gay, I'd like to know.
Yes.
But then I Googled it and a very healthy fan fiction contingent based on that idea exists.
That's incredible.
So other people have got to this conclusion before me.
Okay, amazing. I've never thought about it ever. But perfect. I think it's the one. It's the missing piece.
It's the missing piece. That's it. And maybe because like there are out female tennis players, but very few out male players. So
maybe
there was originally a subplot about that, because it does feel like this movie's missing a subplot. You know.
Yes. But, yeah.
All right. That was my last thing I wanted to say about this movie. What's yours?
Oh my word. What is the last thing I want to say about this movie? Well, I guess one of the things I was thinking when I watched it again is that there's a moment where they're like in bed and that he's made breakfast And she's like, oh, no wonder the... I think she does say English, I guess.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, no wonder the English never win Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Because he's got this, like, huge fry-up and stuff. Yeah. And it's mentioned a couple of times. And he plays against Tim. Tom.
Yeah.
Who's obviously Tim. Mm. And remembering that at this time, it would have been Henman Hill, not Murray Mount. And it was all pre-someone British... I mean, Scottish. Yay. But winning Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And it's sort of being this kind of... Also, the film, and I feel like, again, one of the reasons it was kind of slightly shunted away was that it was just too fantastical. Okay, fine, he's a wild card, which is more fantastical. But that someone could just... That a Brit could come in and win a sort of... A brutal sport that is about winning or losing... And the only way you win is winning every single match and consistently winning. And not just like in one sort of for one run, but consistently for years and years. And you win every time. And you don't get too polite and you don't get caught up in your head and you achieve that. And it was kind of dismissed as like, okay, you know, we all love a love story, but that one's ridiculous. And now it's like, it's real. It happened 2013.
Yes, I remember it so clearly.
I
mean, we all
vividly,
do, right? Like, come on.
I vividly remember watching it. It was, I actually watched it in Scotland.
And oh my God.
Which was amazing.
Are you half Scottish or something?
On my dad's side.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I was up there for other reasons. And I remember I was sitting in a back garden. And right at the moment he was going to serve the very last I was this wonderful woman, old lady, she got up to go to the loo. And it was like, what? It's about like Scottish history is about to be made.
Aww.
And she's like, I'm just going to go to the loo. And it's just being, it was so, so sweet. I'll never forget, like, because everyone was gripped. It was so exciting that this was really going to happen. And she was like, yeah, I'm interested, but it's never like, it's not going to happen. Even in this, like in that, in those last throes of thinking, I'm not really missing anything. But then something really amazing did happen. And it was in that year, like that was 2013. 2012 had been so unifying because of sports.
In
the Olympics, and like London for like the last time felt like this beautiful melting love box of sort of optimism, and it still felt really joyful and open and soft and kind. And I don't know, there's something in that, and this film has that, but was doing it a really long, like way before any of that stuff happened, and it was kind of dismissed as unrealistic. And I think the way sport as well has gone is that you can stand for good things and win. Mm. You can be kind. And so like back in the day, like, you know, footballers, when I was at school and we'd like stop to watch a sort of quarterfinal or something at school on a projector, all those footballers that were just like doing just ridiculous things, they didn't stand for much good. Now that's really changed. And sport in general has sort of stepped into the space of representing and meaning more than just like wealth and glitz and glamour. It's about something else. And like, there's an essence of that in this film.
That was so much a part of the last World Cup, right?
It
was
totally.
Just like, I remember even people who didn't care became so much about the boys because those players became like represented. They were so responsible with the power that they had. And it really felt like they knew that the country was looking at them. And it was just... That for me, I actually had I had a horrible time around 2012, 2013 for various reasons. But like I remember feeling like London's whole vibe was against me at that time. But then when the World Cup came around in 20, just before COVID.
Yeah.
That whole time. That
2018.
That to me was the soft bubble of time. Yeah. I remember it was like the semi.
It was very hot as well.
So it was that amazing heat wave. Yeah. And it was like the semis. But it was the semis were on the same day as Pride. And I remember I was in Borough watching it on some sort of roof bar or whatever, and like Pride and the match had kind of collided and everyone mixed in together, so it was just like rainbows in England shirts and it was so gorgeous. Everyone was just having a party in the street.
Yeah, the first and last time an England shirt has ever been like, oh, that's so nice.
I know.
Rather than like, run away. Yeah, there's something about that, and I think, I don't know, this film always makes me feel warm and fuzzy about a city that sometimes is really brutal and insanely expensive and really lonely. It makes me feel like it's warm. Just like the weather's always really good in the show, apart from obviously there's a bit with the rain.
And the way the rain is done, it feels so British summertime, all of it.
Well, there's like literally there's a shot of this sort of bunch of strawberries in a glass kind of jar, like getting sort of rained on.
It's a beautiful shot.
It's really beautiful. The whole thing is done so well, and like, and him sort of like sliding across the lawn, and this sort of, you know, he's an underdog and you really think he's going to choke and he doesn't. And a lot of that is because this incredible woman is like, you need to like fight and stop apologizing all the time.
Yeah.
And go and do it. And he does say this thing right at the end where he says, I love you, or something. And he's like, she's like, I'm not going anywhere. And then he just says, oh God, Jess, don't cry. That's ridiculous.
No, please cry. crying aloud.
And
crying encouraged.
He says, no, you're going, she says, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. He says, no, you're going very, very far. And it's like and the end of the movie is about, it's kind of like this shot on him and his life in New York. And he's like, she won.
Twice.
The American Open and Wimbledon twice. And I know that there's like the critics out there would be like, well, why isn't it just about her?
Yeah.
But it's this beautiful film about sort of someone sort of softening and another person realizing their inner strength. And like when a unity between two, when two people, the right two people, find each other, whether you're like a great sportsman and you could win Wimbledon, or if you're just milling around doing your own thing, eating crisps, feeling like an athlete on the tube, there's something in that that you can find the right balance that gives you all of that all at once and makes you feel like you're learning all the time off someone. And that's such a healthy, beautiful way to sort of tell a story of love, that when I watched this sort of pre-boyfriend or anything, I was like, I'd like that. That would be great. Someone going, I want to see you fly. I want to see you go and like smash it. And that would be amazing. That would make me really happy. And I don't know. Before it was fashionable to say that, like in films and movies. Yeah. And it's so beautiful. I love it. You're going very far indeed. And I just, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Wimbledon. What have you done to us?
I'm so glad, because like, I love this movie and I've always liked it a lot, but I've never, like, it's not been a yearly watch the way it has been for you. And I feel like you've really put into words all these things that I felt but not really had quite put together yet. And you clearly have been like writing a thesis on this for some time.
What's mad is I watch it every year, and I watched it again this year, realizing I had not watched any Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And I now will. I'm going to spend this week, in the final week of it, just watching it.
I'm going to try and go this week.
And like,
so if a sports PR hears this episode,
yes,
please
reach out.
I've
never been to Wimbledon.
If we can get tickets, do you want to come?
Yay! I love strawberries and sport.
And togetherness.
Togetherness. Beautiful. Yeah.
Oh my God. This is going to be one of those episodes of the podcast that when I'm trying to get other guests, I'll be like, listen to this one. This is a good representation of what we're all about. Just like early noughties films where that were largely overlooked that we cry at twice.
So good. So good.
Oh my God. Jessie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. This is heaven.
Total heaven. Is there anything that you're coming out with that we should know about? Or
I should probably do some of that. What am I doing? There are two things coming out, but I don't know when they're coming out.
Okay. Very much the actor's life.
Very, very much the actor's life. But yeah, some bits and bobs I've been up to recently, which is really cool. Oh. So yeah, hopefully later on in 2022.
All right, Jessie, thank you so much.
Amazing, thank you.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. The podcast was produced and edited by me, with mix and music by Harry Harris and artwork by Gavin Day. If you'd like to email me about the pod, you can do so on sentimentalpod@gmail.com or get in touch with me directly on Twitter or Instagram @Zaraline.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.